ओम ज्ञान सुमिरन्तस्य ज्ञानं जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
यस्मिन् कर्म समावायो यथा येनोपगृह्यते गुणानां गुणिनां चैव हरिनामम् अभ्युच्यताम्। Then again, kindly describe how the proportionate accumulation of the reactions resulting from the different modes of material nature acts upon the desiring living being, promoting or degrading him among the different species of life, beginning from the demigods down to the most insignificant creatures. Prabhupada is discussing in the purport here how one has to be qualified in terms of material qualification to enter a higher position, either within the present country one's in, to go to a higher position, to become a high court judge. You have to get the qualification. Not anyone can become a high court judge. Or to go to a living condition, to transfer all together to a living condition which is considered better, just like, for instance, people like to go from India to America. So they have to satisfy the American immigration service that they're qualified to be an American citizen. Generally, they like to see that people have plenty of money, either they should have plenty of money or they should have very good material qualification, then they can be allowed to enter. Or, clandestinely, they allow people to enter who have another qualification, that they're very low on the social scale, and they allow them to clandestinely come in and become a cheap labor force. But to legally enter, one has to get proper permission to go. So we see that also to enter the spiritual world, one has to get the qualification. Prabhupada writes here that the Americans do not wish to share their prosperity with any foreigner who has not qualified himself as a citizen of America. They're a prosperous country, therefore people want to go there, because they say, well, if I go there with the same amount of work that I'm doing here, I could be living a better life. I'm working so much here, but I can hardly get enough to support myself, and my living condition is not very good. But if I go to America with the same amount of work, I can live very comfortably and have all facilities, so why not go there? And then the Americans will say, hey, we don't want all of you people coming. If so many people come, then our prosperity will decrease. So they don't allow people to come without proper permission, unless they think that they don't allow someone to immigrate to America unless they think that such a person can contribute to the overall prosperity of the situation. They don't want them simply to take away our prosperity, but if they can contribute to our prosperity, if they can be a highly qualified person, they can contribute to our prosperity or help to improve our standard of life. If they're a qualified doctor or a well-qualified computer engineer or whatever, if they already have lots of money, they'll bring more money into the country, then we'd like them to come. But if they simply want to do some laboring job and will take away from our present Americans the possibility to do such a job, or they'll end up without any job, and then the taxpayers' money will have to go to support them, and we don't want them to come. So the idea of not allowing people to come to America unless they're fully qualified is based upon envy and self-interest. Now the same idea, the same condition is there, that one has to enter the spiritual world only upon being allowed to by the inhabitants there. Just like we have an immigration service. What's that called? Immigration service. USIS, United States Immigration Service. You don't know because you don't need to. I don't need to either. There are plenty of people I come in contact with who think they need to know if they want to immigrate to America. United States Immigration Service. So they control, or are supposed to control, who comes in. They're not so efficient, but to some extent they control that. So there's an immigration service for the spiritual world also. That means that Yogamaya, overseeing from the top, Radharani, she doesn't allow people to come who are not qualified. But that's not because of envy, because the facilities of the spiritual world are unlimited. There's enough for everybody. There's enough facilities. There's no shortage. There's no shortage of anything. But people are disallowed from entering if they don't have the attitude of service to Krishna. The Americans are afraid if people come, they'll take away from our prosperity. But in the spiritual world, anyway, everyone has all prosperity, whatever they need. And on the other hand, they don't care anyway whether they have it or not, because they're only interested in serving Krishna. The whole motive of everyone in the spiritual world is simply how to serve Krishna. So people are banned from entering the spiritual world unless they have a motive of service to Krishna, because the inhabitants of the spiritual world don't want anyone disturbing the atmosphere. They don't want Krishna to be disturbed. Otherwise, they want people to come back to the spiritual world. That's why they also come to the spiritual world. Great devotees like Srila Prabhupada come to this material world because they want everyone, they know what is Krishna's desire, that everyone comes, but they want everyone to come. They make propaganda. Krishna himself comes and makes propaganda, come to the spiritual world. But there's a condition that you have to become qualified. The qualification is you have to become free from envy of Krishna. And concomitantly, as one becomes free from envy of Krishna, then his natural loving feelings for Krishna will develop. There's either love or envy. So as much as we are envious of Krishna, that much our love of Krishna doesn't develop. And as much as our love of Krishna develops, that much our envy of Krishna decreases. So one can enter the spiritual world. It's a very high qualification you have to have, 100%. You can enter, it's like an entrance into IIT, different IITs. What is that? Mumbai, Delhi, Kanpur, Kharagpur, Chennai. That's it, isn't it? So, to get the qualification, you have to have very high marks. Less than 90%, there's no question. But to enter the spiritual world, you have to have 100%. Less than 100%, there's no entry. That means 100% freedom from material desire, and 100% desire to serve Krishna. And what is the present position of pretty much everyone in the material world? 0%. No desire to serve Krishna. They don't even know about Krishna. And even if they do know about Krishna, then the service they'll do is with hardly any motive or any thought of how to serve Krishna, but simply thinking, again, they're thinking, everyone in this material world, every situation is something for me to exploit, so Krishna is someone else for me to exploit. Krishna can give me so many benedictions, let me exploit him. So even most of the religion that goes on in this world, it doesn't lift a person beyond the 0% factor. And he's still so much motivated, but personal motivation, fully motivated, personal motivation. Therefore, Bhamanda Bhamate Ikono Bhagyavandi Guru Krishna Prasadu Pai Bhakti Natati. Bhakti means, real bhakti means, real devotion means, that which is free from any personal desire. Only the desire to please Krishna. The bhakti lata bij means the seed of the creeper of devotional service. It means a seed, it's not a tree. It's not the fully fledged, manifest phenomenon. Phenomenon. It's the seed. It means that the possibility is there, but it hasn't manifested. So the pure devotees, they move in this world to implant people with the idea to go back home, back to Godhead. Your position is not here. Your position is not in America either. Your position is not, you're striving for position, you want to be a high court judge. But that is not your real position. Your real position is to be the pure, unmotivated servant of Krishna. So people come from the spiritual world to get that idea. They want people to come back to Krishna. But they also have to train others how to become purified so that they can go back, because it's a very high standard. This material world is low class. We talk about in this material world, high class, low class. But actually everything is low class. Without Krishna consciousness, everything is low class. Even it may appear, something may appear to be very high class, but it's simply a veneer. You know this word veneer means? It means a thin outer covering which looks good. but actually underneath you'll find it's not good. Now, it literally means this life you'll have a table which is made of cheap wood, and then they'll put a very thin layer of expensive wood on top, or sometimes they put plastic which is made to look like expensive wood. So it looks good, but actually the quality is not good. So similarly, we can find people who are, they may be very high class or well behaved or whatever. They may be very much in the mode of goodness. But without Krishna consciousness, the Srimad Bhagavatam sets such a standard from the beginning. It's all a waste of time. Whatever religious activities one performs, if they don't lead one to get a taste for hearing about Krishna, then it's simply a waste of time. That means that even if one is a very pious brahmana, very much in the mode of three times a day, keeping, never raising his voice, very peaceful, all the qualities of a brahmana. But if he doesn't have devotion to Krishna, then again, bhagavad bhakti hi nasya jati shastra tapas treva apranasya eva dehaja mandanam lokarandanam. That without devotion to Krishna, even if one has, if one is very austere, he chants many mantras, born in a high class family, whatever good qualifications he may have, without devotion to Krishna, it's like the decoration of a dead body. It looks nice, but actually it's ghastly. It's horrible. It's a fact. It's horrible. Material life means horrible. Even we may be fooled. That foolishness is there. That we here in this area, there's so many high-class people. We may visit their homes and see everything is neat and tidy, and the family members are very nice, and they have servants, and it's all very wonderful. But actually, it's horrible. The whole situation, we're thinking it's a nice situation. But it's horrible. The people that are living there with, yes, very nice, but actually they have so much tension and anxiety, and they're on the path of repeated birth and death. It's an illusion that the situation is very nice, because they're going to be dead very soon. And then they have to enter another body. Even the present situation is not good, although it may appear to be good. And the future situation is simply birth after birth in this material world. We suffer in various conditions. So without Krishna, everything is useless. But to get Krishna, you have to be very sincere about that. You get the chance. Devotees, they move in this world to give people the chance to become Krishna conscious by giving them the idea of Krishna consciousness. Someone, some rare person in this world, they get the seed of devotional service. But he has to water that. The seed of devotional service means that amidst our envy, lust, anger, greed, material attachment, and so many, Maya takes so many different forms. You know, they can be basically classified into lust, greed, anger, all these. You say Tamko, Lobh, Moha, Madha, Matsarya, these six basic symptoms of attachment to this material world. Well, Maya takes so many different forms. You see, even here in India, where it's supposed to be a land of spiritual life, but there's one form of bodily attachment here, which you don't find in other places, at least not to the extent and systematic manner that it's found in India, which is caste consciousness, which is all-pervading in Indian society. It's so strong that people, they just... Someone thinks, I'm a Brahmin, or I'm a Kshatriya, these people are... It's such a very, very difficult, I see for Indian people, it's very, very difficult to get out of, especially those who are born in a high caste family, they're thinking that I am a Brahmin, I'm intrinsically something better than others. Very, very strong. What we see here in Kedar district, now it's Anand district, but anyway, formerly Kedar district. There's so many Patel, they're famous, Kedar district Patel, they're famous for being rich. And generally they're pretty puffed up about it. They're very conscious that I am a Kedar district Patel, and this ahankar, we are something better than, we're very capable, we're very intelligent, we're rich, we have our relations all over the world. So this relationship, the identification of oneself with the body, India is meant for spiritual life, which begins with non-identification with the body, but we find that here, another kind of Maya has taken another form to identify people with their caste, that we are better, and so much better. But if, as soon as you think like that, then you're disqualified from spiritual life, because spiritual life begins with humility, of considering, or not actually considering, but actually understanding that I'm very insignificant. So Maya is taking many, many, many forms. Maya has so many ways of coming. But in the midst of all that Maya, so many wrong ideas, the devotees, the pure devotees, they move in this world to try to plant the seed of devotional service in the heart. How is that to be sown? How is that seed of devotional service to be sown? It can be sown in the heart of someone who is willing to accept it. Otherwise, seeds can be sown everywhere, but if seeds are sown in barren ground, they don't grow. Or, even if someone accepts the seed in his heart, he may do so superficially, just like someone says, here, take these seeds, you can grow something very nice, just like in America, in the Western countries, you may find certain class of people, they'll say to their friends, here, take these seeds, you can grow some pretty good weeds with them. That means marijuana. So, certain class of person will like to say, oh yes, we can get some very good weeds. That's the slang word, some nice weeds. But simply to accept the seed is not really accepting it unless you're prepared to water it. If you sow the seed in barren land, then even if there's water, it won't come up very nicely. That means that if the heart is very much contaminated, especially with envy, envy is the antithesis of Krishna consciousness, then even if there's hearing and chanting, which is the water, this is described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Mali Hoya Shaybij Kari Arapan Shravan Kirtan Jale Kari Shinchan, that having planted, having accepted, having got the seed, one should become a gardener and plant. You take the seed, you have to put it, you have to put it. See, when you sow seeds, you have to see what is the proper kind of soil to plant it in and how far apart they should be. And sometimes it's recommended you make rows with ditches. There are so many conditions for different kinds of seeds to come up. So having taken the seed, you have to plant it, and then the seed has to be watered. In this example, the water is hearing and chanting about Krishna. But the hearing and chanting about Krishna, if it's not done very sincerely with the desire to become free from envy and delusion, then even one may go on watering, then bahujanma kare jadi shravan kirtan tabu na pai Krishna pade premadan. The whole idea of growing the plant of devotional service is to eventually get the fruit. It comes after some time, it doesn't come immediately. The fruit is praying fall, Krishna praying fall, the fruit of love of Krishna. But even if we sow the seed and we give the water, but it won't come if the land is barren, if the heart is hard. In that case, it's possible, just like you'll see in the desert, if you go to Al Ain in the United Arab Emirates, you'll find a small town built in the desert. There's no water there and there's only sand. And you'll find nice gardens with nice soil. How is that? They imported soil from New Zealand. And they bring water for several hundred kilometers from the desalination plant next to the sea. So they've done it. Even though the situation is not intrinsically favorable for gardens, they have nice gardens. Because the soil itself is barren, but they made the condition next on which the garden can grow. So anyone can take the Krishna consciousness, but if the heart is very hard, then even the water won't have that much effect. Or on the other hand, even if someone is very good, just like in Gita, Krishna says that Manghi Pati Vyapachata Yeti Siu Papa Yoni Striyo Vaishastra Sarasu Das Titi Yanti Param. But then he gives the example of those who are not considered very, first of all, he gives the example of those who are not considered very eligible for devotional service. Women, Vaishas, Shudras, even lower, they can attain the supreme destination. They can attain to me if they fully take shelter of me. So that's an example of someone who's not intrinsically considered fit for spiritual life, but who anyway can make themselves fit by taking shelter of Krishna. But then in the next verse, Krishna says, King Puna Brahmana Punya Bhaktara Jashayatata Anitya Masukam Lokam. What is that? Imam Prapya Bhajasprama. He says that, then what to speak of the saintly brahmanas and pious kings who in this miserable temporary material world take to my devotional service? In other words, if those who are less qualified can become Krishna conscious, then what to speak of those who are more qualified? So even if one is, but on the other hand, if one is more qualified, if he has a better background to take to devotional service, if he doesn't properly, if he doesn't hear and chant about Krishna, then even if the seed is put in the nice ground, the ground is very nice, but you don't properly cultivate it, you don't water it, you don't cultivate it properly, then you also won't get the goal of love of Krishna. So we see that, for instance, in India, in general, people are considered to be better candidates for devotional service than those born outside India. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu clearly said, Bharata bhumite hoilo manusa janmaja janma shata kari karo para upakar. He specifically said that those who have taken birth as human beings in the land of India, they in particular should take advantage of this opportunity to become fully Krishna conscious, and then they should give it to others also. Not that others are bad, but particularly those in India are supposed to take the opportunity. But if one is born in India, but he doesn't take up the process of Krishna consciousness, he doesn't take the opportunity, even he may be, we see people, they grow up hearing about Krishna and Ram, of course in modern India, they may not also. But at least that was their traditional culture. And even now, to some extent, definitely India is better, intrinsically better atmosphere than in other countries of being Krishna conscious. But if the people don't take it up, then they also don't get love of Krishna. In other words, if devotees, they come to this world, they get the idea how to go back home, back to Godhead. They give all facilities. But if we don't take advantage of that, then what is that? That's described in, by Krishna in Bhagavatam. He says that. What is that verse? Sa'atmaha, the killer is killing himself. How does that verse begin? That you've got the boat, you've got the wind, you've got the captain. I can't remember it now. That's a very well known verse. Navasvatereva. That, Navansukalpo Guru Karnadharam. Mayanukura. I've got everything except the first line. He says that. No, I can't remember it. Anyway, the version is that if one has got this very good opportunity of the human form of life, Durlabham Sudurlabham. It's one has got the opportunity of this rare opportunity in the human form of life. But he also has the good spiritual master to guide him, this Pravansukha for them, the good boat, the human body. Then Guru is there, spiritual master competent to guide, the favorable winds are there in the form of the scriptures. Scriptural injunctions and directions given by Krishna. But despite having all of this, if one doesn't take opportunity and fails to become Krishna conscious and doesn't cross the ocean of material existence, then he's killing himself. He's spoiled his opportunity. So all opportunity is there to go back to Godhead. But there is some condition. One has to be very, very serious. 100%. Of course, Krishna says also that ananya sinti antamam yajana paripasati. Krishna says that those who have the attitude of always wanting to meditate, those who always meditate upon me, Krishna says, I preserve what they have and carry what they lack. He also says, Hesham Satata Yuktanam, Rajatam, three people who become the Dali Bhutti Yogam, Jina Mahamukhadati, Hesham Ivanukam Pratamaham. Ajnana jantamaha nasyami atmabhavasya jnana jipena bhaskata. Krishna says that those who are worshipping, always engaging my service with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. Just like within their, the ignorance within their heart is destroyed by me in the form of the light of knowledge. So, if one takes up seriously Krishna consciousness, then even what he lacks, Krishna will make up. Krishna will help. Krishna helps us. If we think 100%, how can I get 100%? I can't even get 100% in a material exam. So what to speak about 100% in the spiritual exam, which is in a much higher level? How am I going to get 100%? But Krishna says, I'll help you. You do your bit, I'll help you. Prabhupada explained this in this way, that if you take one step towards Krishna, Krishna will take 10 steps towards you. But then, you have to make the step. If you say, look, you know, Krishna, why don't you just carry me? I'll carry you, but you have to make your step. You have to show our enthusiasm, our determination. Otherwise, by ourselves, it's not possible to overcome material desires. That is the great mistake of the yogis. They're trying to control the senses, but there's another kind of bees within the heart. There's the bhakti lata bees that has to be planted, but within our heart, there is the bees, the seed of sinful desire, which there are four stages of sin that leads the seed. What is that seed? The seed is envy of Krishna. The seed is forgetfulness of Krishna. So there's the seed, and then the basic platform on which material life goes on. So it's very difficult to uproot that. The yogis are trying to do that by controlling the mind and senses, but it's very difficult to get out the seed. And another example, probably most people in India don't do any gardening, that's just for farmers. Well, it used to be most people in India were farmers also, or at least they had some land, but in America, I don't know, but in England, most people, they have a little garden in their home, so everyone has. Most people, or even if they live in high-rise apartments, they have some plot of land. In Russia also, everyone has this, some land they can go and work on. So anyone who's done any gardening, you know there's some kind of weed. But even if you pull it up, even if you try to dig it up, the roots go under, and there'll be a big network of roots under the ground. And it's practically, unless you, even if you plow the field, with such, I mean, in the home garden you don't do plowing. But even if you plow the field, these roots will be broken up, but they're so, what's the word? Intransigent, tenacious, that's the word. They're so tenacious that the pieces of root that are cut up, they're still in the ground, and again they'll remain alive, and again they'll put down their roots, and again, and they strangle up all the other plants. So this material desire is like a big network of desires in the heart. It's very, very difficult to get out. So the yogis, they perform, they're controlling the mind and the senses, but the seed or the network of material desires is within the heart. They can't get it out. That's why the yogis, they can never become fully purified. Despite their tremendous endeavors to do so, even though they become purified, they can never become fully purified because they neglect to worship Krishna. Cannot become fully purified. Whereas the devotee, Parikshit Maharaj is asking, Shukadeva Goswami was asking Parikshit Maharaj. No, Parikshit was asking Shukadeva, and Shukadeva was explaining, but then Parikshit Goswami eventually, seeing that Parikshit Maharaj had understood what he'd been speaking to him, and what we now have as he'd been speaking to him in the previous four cantos of the Bhagavatam. This comes up at the beginning of sixth canto, and Shukadeva begins speaking in the second canto. Parikshit Maharaj had understood the point that only by pure devotional service one can become fully purified. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana aghangan vantikaj sneha niharam eva bhaskara. That just like the sun dissipates the fog, which is not possible, you can't do anything. You can't bring big blowers to blow away the fog, or there's nothing you can do. As long as the fog's there, there's nothing you can do. It's just whatever. You see, they have airplanes, such great technology, but if there's fog, then they're not supposed to fly. The flight won't take off if there's fog in the landing place. In Delhi, that's quite common in the winter. Just now, in Bangladesh, I had that. The flight was delayed because at the other end there's fog, and then they can't land. They can land in the night, but they can't land in fog. And what are you going to do about it? Nothing you can do. You just have to wait for the sun to come up. The sun will dissipate the fog. So like that, even by the greatest of material means, even if you have all So you have fantastic computer-controlled aircraft and this and that. But if there's fog, you can't fly. You're at the mercy of this. When the sun comes up, then the fog will dissipate. Even sometimes, I've seen in England, even the fog is there all day because the sun in the winter is so weak. Not that the sun's weak, but according to the season. So even then, it doesn't become dissipated. But generally, that's the fog is dissipated when the sun comes up. So similarly, the only method that can remove all the dirty things in the heart, right from the very core, is if we become Krishna conscious. And it's not possible by our own endeavor when Krishna helps. The bhakti yogi, he can become perfect because he knows the secret. That I have to do my part, but I have to depend on Krishna. Krishna helps a devotee who has that attitude. Even if we see ourselves, we have so many dirty desires within the heart. How to get rid of them? Then we have to turn to Krishna. Krishna, please help. Then it's possible. If we think by myself, I am going to. Even if we think we can control Krishna's helping us. If we think we're going to do it by ourselves, I'm going to perform so much fasting and austerity. That may help to control material desires. Certainly, that's good. But ultimately, if we think we're going to take the yogi's process, it won't fully help us. Or even if we think, yes, I accept Krishna, only Krishna can help me, but we can't force Krishna to help us. If we say that, now I'm going to chant 64 rounds a day, and because of that, I'm definitely going to get free from all my material desires, it may not work because it's the wrong attitude. It's not actually taking shelter of Krishna. It's like trying to channel Krishna into the way that we want him to serve us. But fully taking shelter of Krishna means to chant, as Prabhupada says, helplessly like a child, that I'm completely dependent on you. That Gopinath song is very nice by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says that, you know, I try to give up my material desires, but I'm just completely surrounded by them and overcome by them. And what can I do? You'd better do it. You'd better. Why are you? I'm your devotee. You should look after me now. I'm trying my best. Please just help me. That attitude that I have no other hope. If you don't deliver me, then I'm just completely sunk. He's taking that position of being a very fallen materialist. But that attitude, that what hope do I have? I'm not a yogi, and even if I was, it wouldn't help me. Krishna, you're my only shelter. So that is the attitude, to consider oneself a fallen. We are that fallen. We're fallen in this material world. So that attitude that, Krishna, you can help me. How am I going to become 100% free from material desires? We have to try. We have to do our bit. We have to make our step towards Krishna, but ultimately, we have to depend on Krishna. And Krishna will reciprocate with a devotee. Krishna likes to reciprocate. That's what he wants. He wants to reciprocate with his devotee, but we have to be his devotee. We can't force Krishna. And we heard that, I heard that so-and-so, the deity was talking to them. So, okay, I'm gonna make the deity talk to me too. It's not gonna work. He will when he wants to. Not that, you know, you gotta. Can't threaten Krishna. Of course, someone who's on a very high level, they can do that. But that's out of an attitude of complete love and submission. Out of complete love and submission, he can practically compel Krishna. That story of Raghunandan Thakur is very famous, the young boy who was asked by his father to offer the food to the deity. He'd never done it before. So he thought, well, we're offering him food, so he should eat it, isn't it? So when he offered the food, his father told him, you ring the bell and you say this. And he did it. And he said, well, why aren't you eating it? Now, I did what my father said. Why aren't you eating it? He said, look, if you don't eat it, then my father will be angry because I didn't. I must have done it wrong. Because you eat it. So Krishna did. And the mother asked, well, did you offer it? Yeah, so you have to bring it out. He said, what do you mean? He already ate it.
I thought, well,
father came back, he had to go out. Said, well, you know, where's the prasad? Well, the, you know, boy Raghunandan, he said that Krishna had it. Said, well, sounds a little strange. So they tested and so same thing. Krishna had it. Same thing happened the next day with the father spying. So that may be. If one has an attitude, Yashoda, she's tying up Krishna. He can't do that. He can, but it's offensive. She can do. But the mood of the devotee, the fallen devotee in this material world, is trying to be a devotee, is very, very helplessly depending upon Krishna. And Krishna will help to get beyond all this nonsense of being going to America, becoming a big shot in this material world, going to the heavenly planets, becoming a big shot in the spiritual movement. I'm a big spiritual leader. It's just the same. It's no different from the foolishness of the materialist who wants to be the president or recognized. And Prabhupada clearly said that. He said that the sannyasi wants people to honor him this way and that way and special facilities. And he may have it, but if he wants it, it's just sexism. That's all. Prophet adoration and distinction. That's all. Lab puja position. So, Krishna comes. He sends his devotees to teach us not to be nonsense, to be sense, not to be a nonsensical person, to be a sensible person. Sensible person means someone who jumps up and down, sings very loudly, plays on musical instruments, takes cold showers in the winter. This is sense. And nonsense means to be... sense means getting up early in the morning, taking a bath, jumping up and down, singing what? Hare Krishna. And nonsense means to be a very high class or low class or any class, well behaved even, or not well behaved, but not Krishna conscious. If we're well behaved, we can go to the heavenly planet. If we're not well behaved, we can go to the hellish planet. But it's all nonsense. So, Bhagavatam is teaching us to be sensible by going to Krishna, by unmixed devotional service, which is possible to attain by our sincere endeavors, aided by Krishna, and will help the devotee to come to him. Hare Krishna. Is there any question?
Maharaj, you said that Krishna and the residents of the spiritual world want the conditioned souls to come back there. So how is it that information about devotional service and the personality of Krishna and his abode is very rarely made available in this material world?
Yeah, it is there, but people, they don't want to take it. Otherwise, it's there in various degrees in human society. But generally, people don't want to take. Otherwise, in every human society, you'll find there's some religious system. And if one prosecutes that, then he can become elevated. It's the same. It's the same question can be put in another way, that why is there so much Maya? Because we want it. If we want Krishna, then Krishna will make the arrangement. He's always making. He comes himself in so many different incarnations. He sends his devotees. He's always making propaganda. From within the heart, he's always trying to enliven the conditioned souls. So yes, we say that it's rare, but it's rare, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this movement is, that in particular, that's very rare. But otherwise, in human society, there's always some religious system, unless they're, by their karmic reaction, they're very extremely fallen, just like jungle vases. Otherwise, the whole Vedic system is meant for gradual elevation. Because generally people that even the information says they're just not ready to take it. They're just too much attached to material Like they're not interested. Therefore, the whole Vedic and Varnashram system, or there's systems of religion which are not so much developed, like Christianity or Islam, they're there in human society to gradually elevate people to the point. Otherwise, even the information is given, people in general, they're not ready to listen. The desire of the devotees is very strong to bring people back to Godhead. But the desire of the conditioned souls is also very strong not to go back to Godhead. Very, very strong desire. You see, Indra, he was made a pig. He didn't want to change his situation. So similarly, we're all in this material world. We become so attached to the situation we're in, because we, in the form of a pig, Indra felt, I'm having my senses fulfilled, my sense desires fulfilled, so he felt himself completely happy. So we're feeling like that, my sense desires are being fulfilled, but we don't perceive how much we're suffering. What is the suffering in this material world? Well, we can say birth, death, old age and disease, and adhyatmika adhidaivika adhibhoti, but the real suffering is not being Krishna conscious. These are all simply external manifestations. The real suffering that we're really suffering, and that we're not even, we're so much in illusion, we're not even conscious of it. We're suffering because we're not Krishna conscious. Just like we were discussing in the class yesterday in Baroda, how it's described how the cowherd men, they came to see, they ran down the hill, and then they saw their, Govardhan Hill, and they saw their sons, who were actually Krishna. Krishna taking the form of their sons. So they expressed so much affection to them, and then even when they left them, the cows went on, the cowherd boys went on herding the calves, and the cowherd men went on herding the cows. But even when they went away, they're thinking of their sons, who were all Krishna, they were crying profusely. But we don't see that in this material world. I was saying in the class yesterday that when Shor Satchidanand loves his daughters, but when they go to school, he doesn't start crying out of separation. And if he did, he would be considered mentally imbalanced. But actually, the real situation of the jiva is not to the... We hear so much about love, but people in this material world have no idea what love is. Love, the real nature of the anandam buddhi vardhanam, the ever-increasing ocean of transcendental bliss, is one of so much love that even a blinking for the gopis, even a blinking of an eyelid, they consider to be a curse. Because they didn't see Krishna. I mean, you don't even notice when you blink your eyelid, but the gopis do, because they don't see Krishna for that amount of time. So it's inconceivable. We're thinking that we're happy because we have this tiny perverted reflection of pleasure. But we're actually suffering because we don't know. We're divorced from our real pleasurable existence, which is love of Krishna, which from the material point of view, it makes you like a madman. Actually, from the realistic point of view, people say, be realistic. Why are you becoming a sadhu? Why don't you be realistic? But this is realism. Realism means to be Krishna conscious. And it's illusion not to be Krishna conscious. They think this is normal to struggle for material ends, and they consider that a normal life, but it's abnormal, it's insane. They don't know. Maya mukta jiva nahi sata Krishna gyan. Jivere kripa koile Krishna bid pura. People, they don't know, they're in such illusion, they don't know what their real interest is. They don't know. So, out of compassion for them, Krishna, in the form of Vyasadeva, compiles the Vedic literatures. So that's there in human society. People want to take advantage of it. In this age, it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, they don't wait for people to take advantage. They go out searching for them. Where's that verse? Maya amrigam dayatipsitam anvadhava. Seeing everyone captured by Maya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu runs after them to try and give them Krishna. He doesn't wait. You hear the story of the guru in the cave, and the disciple stands outside fasting for 5 days in the snow. Then the guru looks out and blows his nose on him and says, okay. Kicks him in the face a couple of times and says, okay. All right, you can be my servant. And then for the next 20 years you can just, you know, clean out my toilet and that's all. Then maybe after that I'll say something. This idea they have, how the, I mean that's there, especially in the Buddhist idea, something there that how the disciple has to become so, it's like there's no affection between the guru and the disciple. But here we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is chasing after the conditions. So he goes out for them. Chanting, Gai Gora Madhu Shara. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very sweetly chanting the holy name so that everyone can hear. That's the special mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's no dearth of knowledge in human society and spiritual life if people want it, but people don't want it. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu forces them that you don't want Krishna, alright, we're going to chant Hare Krishna, and then that will purify you even if you don't want it. Even then, if someone is determined, he doesn't have to become Krishna conscious. If someone is very determined, then Matiana Krishna Paratasvatova Matiabhadhanagodhimishatamas. If one is determined to chew the chew and go to hell due to uncontrolled senses, then by his own endeavor he's not going to discover Krishna because he doesn't want to. And even by the endeavors of others he's not going to do so. Of course Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also has his tricks. He took sannyas so that the people would respect him because they used, he was behaving normally, being Krishna conscious, and they considered it abnormal. They criticized him for that. So he took sannyas, and even though from the external point of view he may have acted very abnormally, jumping, dancing, crying, falling on the ground, the fact that he was a sannyasi, still people respected. So many people followed him in his sankirtan. Because he gave them. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's world is so nice that from the very beginning there's experience of Krishna. At least whatever little capacity the jiva has anyway limited capacity to understand Krishna, but in the conditioned state when we're so much covered by material desires, even our limited capacity to understand Krishna is even more severely limited. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is such that not considering patra patra vichanahi nahistanastan jidaha pai tare deya prem, not considering who is fit or who is not fit, what is the proper time, place or circumstance. If Chaitanya Mahaprabhu finds anyone in the slightest bit willing to accept the mercy, his mercy, then he's willing to give it out. That is his great mercy. Extraordinary mercy.
Don't describe the minds of those.
Yeah, don't describe the minds of those who are the foolish. Then? The devotees of the Lord know the purpose of the Lord, they're more merciful. Yeah, actually, to understand scripture, you see, even Bhagavad Gita, you'll find that the Prabhupada has come to explain Bhagavad Gita as it is, and he always says that you just have to explain as Krishna explains. And sometimes, he's explaining actually not exactly what Krishna says, but what is his inner intention. Now, the devotee understands the inner intention of the Lord. That's why, actually, to understand scripture, it's not. That's why it says, Namedhya Nachatikaya, Bhaktiya Bhagavata Grahya, Namedhya Nachatikaya. That one, not simply by one's intelligence or even by reading the commentaries, can one understand Srimad Bhagavatam, but by, when one is fully devotional, then he can understand. And we say, why read it at all? And why are there commentaries? The Bhagavatam will help us, of course. The Bhagavatam is one of the most important. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended for understanding Krishna. And the commentaries by the Acharyas, they certainly help us to come closer to Krishna. But on the other hand, if we think that simply by studying and by my intelligence I can understand, we can't understand. But with an attitude of devotion, we can understand. But even then, sometimes what is stated, it takes mercy of the Acharyas and Krishna to understand. Many times, you see, even what Prabhupada, I don't think anyone ever in history spoke as clearly as Prabhupada, but sometimes he's misunderstood also. It's possible to misunderstand. People are arguing over what he meant. Apparently one of our GPCs in the recent GPC meeting openly said that Prabhupada did not want to spread Vedic culture. I don't know if he's reading Prabhupada's books. He said he doesn't want to spread Vedic culture, he wants to spread Krishna consciousness, as if there is a difference. I mean, there are differences, but they're inseparable. So so many things Prabhupada wrote about Vedic culture. Was he doing it just, he's fed up of writing about Krishna, and like little variety will write something about Vedic culture. Variety is the spice of life. And it's possible, you see, even if one is many years chanting Hare Krishna and has read the books and everything, but if he has a certain... I see that very clearly, that people have the... According to their intention, that's how they tend to understand. Just like... I've been giving classes for many years, and in the course of giving classes, I often speak, as Prabhupada did and as the scriptures do, about how family life is an entanglement and it's a cause of illusion. So, yesterday or the day before, someone who's been hearing me speaking for many years and must have heard this from me many times, he took some objection to me saying that because he's also thinking of entering family life. Whereas previously, when he was being a staunch brahmachari, he liked that. But now the same thing, he doesn't like it. And he's saying, well, don't you think, if you preach like that, then how will there be any varnashram? And giving good arguments why you shouldn't preach like that. And how are people going to live happily in their family? There will be no varna. So, yes, that's also true. Sometimes you preach the other way, that yes, family life, you can be very happy with your wife in Krishna consciousness. And you also preach like that. And both things are true. It's not necessarily that both things are said in the same class or the same... So that requires some intelligence to understand these things. But our intelligence tends to be influenced by our own outlook, by our own desire. That's why it requires actually very transparent intelligence, very submissive intelligence to understand and just to accept. The whole basis is to accept that the acharyas, they know we should hear from them. And even to hear from them, what are they actually communicating to us? Of course, it may be that someone who is wanting to enter family life, that's all they can hear at that stage. So that yes, family life is very good and very nice business. So. But then if they only hear that, and in family life, one is supposed to hear that actually you have to give this all up. You're supposed to hear that also, because otherwise you'll just remain attached. So it may not be very palatable, but they also have to hear that. And even if they can't accept, even if they can't, actually, they're not meant to give it up immediately. They're supposed to go through with it. Usually, after a short time, they get a realization that, well, actually, it's not so much fun, and I would have been better off in my spiritual life maybe if I'd stayed as a brahmachari. Often they get that. But then, the fact is that they had a certain attachment, and the practical realization you get after a short time, it may not be very fixed within the heart. Therefore, one has to go on for many years. Plus, he has to take the responsibility, therefore, of our ashram. So our understanding is also, it also tends to be influenced by our personal desires. That's why. That's also why we have to hear from Guru. Because it's supposed to be that the Guru is transparently representing the message of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Otherwise we may also, people say, well, I can just pick up Prabhupada's books and understand everything by myself. Well, theoretically, maybe, but how it practically applies in our lives, that we also need guidance. We also need to hear. Otherwise, we may become proponents of the half-chicken philosophy. We take the part of Shastra that we like, and we don't take the other part. That can work the other way also. We're talking about someone who's very much attached to family life, and they don't like to hear about renunciation, but there may be others who are attached to renunciation. Well, that sounds very strange, doesn't it? Renunciation means to give up attachment, but you can also become attached to renunciation.
These grihasthas, they're all in maya, they're all attached.
But then you're attached to being a renunciate. But the real attachment should be to Krishna. Not if one is attached to being renounced to this material world, that means it's still a material attachment. It's in relationship to this material world. Therefore, real attachment, real non-attachment means anasaktasya vishayam yataham upayangitaha nivanda krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchitai. Real attachment, real non-attachment
means to see everything in this world, not be attached to it, to be not attached to it to the extent that you can interact with everything in this material world and simply see it's all for Krishna. That's why an advanced devotee, he can have millions of dollars and not be attached, neither want to spend it for a sense gratification, nor become proud of having it. He just wants to use it for Krishna. Anything else? Simply by preaching all anarthas will be cleared from the heart. Who said that? No, I don't hear such a thing. Sadhana has to be there. Purity, one lack of pride. If one simply by preaching, then all anarthas, no, there's no. No, how is that? Someone may be preaching, but he may be doing so in a belligerent or envious manner, or in a way to increase his own prestige. How is that going to clean the heart? One has to hear regularly, chant nicely, serve the devotees, become humble. All these things are required. Preaching should be done, but all aspects of bhakti sadhana should also be done. Preaching is the essence of this Krishna conscious movement. No doubt. But there's no real preaching means from the purity is the force. So there's no purity. If there's not a developed standard of purity, then preaching can, our so-called preaching can sometimes result in of the opposite of preaching. You can make people less interested in Krishna. I've seen that. Once I was distributing books in England, and one man came up to the person who was next to me, and he was English, but he was turned out Lord Shiva. I think Lord Shiva. He was a little belligerent, but you know, he could have been spoken to him. And he didn't. What happened didn't have to happen. What happened was that within about 2 or 3 minutes of him starting to speak with the devotee started beating him and kicking him. So that man went away saying, Krishna consciousness, peace and love. If it had been handled nicely, then maybe he could have become better. At least he had some interest in something, Vedic culture, somewhere. Or he could have at least not have gone away in disgust. So the devotee standing next to him was preaching, but the result was, I don't think Krishna was very pleased with his so-called preaching. Incidentally, that same person is one of the big leaders of the Mitnik movement now. He always had that nature. Very belligerent and aggressive. That's neither, I guess that comment's neither here nor there, but it's just something to note. Anything else? Okay.